The following podcast may contain spoilers, strong language, graphic violence, and nudity. Viewer discretion is advised. I'm not wearing any pants.
Four guys and a movie. Four guys and a movie. Don't I, Brian Robbins, you're reviewing movies for the show. Four guys and a movie.
Welcome. It's 4 a.m. and we're using these sleepless hours of the morning to comb through cinema history and then discuss whether or not it truly deserves all the cheers or jeers it may have gotten in the years past. I am your intrepid explorer host, Anthony. Joining me for this adventure this evening is...
I'm Rob.
I'm Brian.
I'm Joe.
Tonight we will be discussing the 1982 masterpiece, The Beastmaster.
So, we decided to throw our pocket protectors into the ring of derpy nerd guys that like to talk about movies on a podcast. We sure have. Well, I know for the past God knows how many years I've been seeing so many movies, it's just ridiculous.
So many movies.
Owning a good portion of them.
So much money wasted.
Yes. Also, so I want to know why... Why do you have to be Anthony? Because we're going to all call you Tony.
The whole time.
Yeah, I was wondering that.
Because he doesn't work too.
Two syllables or less, bro. All right?
That's like, all you get.
And Joe and I even went the furthest step to do one syllable.
I don't quite have that luxury. Or if you want me to go Ant.
Oh, God.
Do you want to go Ant?
No. He's going to have to be Brian.
Do I need to do the introductions again?
No, it's okay.
It's okay. Sorry. I'm just going to call you Tony.
Whatever.
So the Beastmaster.
Starting out with some lovely still shots, because that's what you want in a good movie.
Still shots?
Still shots. A shot of a bird, a shot of a tiger, a leopard.
Tiger.
Yes. Well, should we get into that right now?
Yeah, let's talk about the tiger.
Ladies and gentlemen, this movie has a tiger in blackface. There's no other way to say it. It's supposed to be a panther. It is clearly a Bengal tiger that they painted black.
Maybe
Sultan.
Yeah. Sultan tiger?
That's the name.
That was the name,
name of
the
tiger.
Oh, Sultan. Of the late.
The late Sultan.
The late after tiger. Yes, we say late because, unfortunately, as we've heard over the internet, a few months after the filming of this movie, the tiger died of some kind of skin problem.
From the toxic paint they used.
And had to keep reapplying because it kept wearing off.
As you can see clearly throughout the movie, I believe one of the beginning battles with the tiger, you can clearly see that its paws are not black as it tries to maul someone. And various points throughout the movie I saw stripes appearing on its tail and so on. We make light of the situation, but that is pretty terrible.
Well, I think they were going to use him as like the Krylon mascot for a while until he died. It just didn't work out.
There's an article I saw that, where they're saying instead of using a real black panther or a fully black tiger, because those exist apparently, they decided to paint a regular tiger. So they're taking a job from a working working black panther or black tiger.
Well, I mean, you can't really expect too much from the leisure investment company that produces this movie.
True, true.
I guess they were too leisurely with this.
It's called the lazy company.
I gotta wonder, though, is it really any cheaper to get a tiger and dye it black than to get a panther?
Well, they couldn't even afford writers.
That's true. That's true.
Like, no dialogue whatsoever.
I just don't get it from a narrative stance either. Like, why couldn't he just have a friggin' tiger? Like,
if
he's black. Like, well, that would just be awesome if he had a tiger.
Abound.
But that's the thing. Was it supposed to be a panther? Or was it supposed to be just a black tiger? Like,
yeah, I think the fact that he has a big cat at his beck and call is all that's important.
I'm going with panther because I do believe, at least I believe in the TV show and possibly in the sequel, he does have a panther that is played by a panther.
Because the tiger died!
Yeah, but they couldn't replace it with another tiger!
They probably couldn't find any tigers that would take the job. They're like, no, I'm sorry. Those days are over.
Thankfully so. Throughout cinema history. I don't know if we want to really get into that right now, but...
So there was the leisure investment code. Then you open up and you get the title of the film, which is in the Beast Wars font, I believe.
I do believe so. Where we first see the last image you'll ever see of that poor tiger.
You know what? We didn't watch all the way through the credits. You think they had an in memory of at the end?
I can only hope that the tiger got paid well enough to...
The whole opening to me seemed kind of like... It was very much like a spaghetti western. Like, it had that kind of like the music and sort of just the monochromatic still photos.
It really did remind me of a movie that was shot in, like, Italy or Spain or somewhere there. Like, not one that was done in Southern California.
It seems like a foreign film.
I think because in all those scenarios, that is the cheapest option.
Yeah, very, very possible.
More cost-effective than style. Then we cut to some stone face that spins around and opens the world's smallest gate.
Yeah, the gate opens, four and a half feet?
Yeah, no, it was six. It was 6 feet.
It was six feet. Yeah, they could get under without ducking, but not...
Still not clear how the cart gets in and out.
They go, a dude on a horse and not getting through there.
Yeah.
The gate might as well not be there.
You lower the gate and there's a 6 foot gap from the top to the top of the archway. You could just climb over.
Yeah. As proven later in the film.
And indeed, if you were on a horse, you could just shoot an arrow over, climb right over.
Throw some fire. Yeah. Like just throw your sack of babies over.
I was going to say, for that matter, the wall's not that big either. You could just get a ladder.
That's true. It was like, what, a 10-foot wall? Like that.
Piercing that place would not be very difficult. Then we lead into the blind witches.
The blind, which is
inside a big ziggurat,
and Rip Torn dressed as a Klingon.
But this is where we first introduced the idea of fuck pants, because no one's wearing pants. None. The whole movie.
You're not.
You can't tell at this point because they have robes, but once the robes come off,
there's a whole lot of cheeks.
Ass cheeks, just
thankfully
all the side
Rip
butt you could handle.
No, not Red Torn, but at the end we get the kid.
Not go there yet.
No, the first asses are the witches.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, this is nice looking, whatever. And then they turn around and you're like, oh, God, the worst masks ever.
Special effects makeup that I've been able to outdo since I was about 12 for Halloween.
I think the prop department went to the set of Star Wars, and after they peeled off the masks of the actors, they picked them up and put them on these witches.
It looked to me more like they put like them in a plastic bag over their head and just turned a vacuum on.
I just think they look more like the prototypes for what they used as for the Skeletor mask in the He-Man movie.
Oh, man.
All the same, just drippy and just horrible. Though clearly could be peeled off at any moment. The king shows up. Him and Rip Torn have a little throwdown of sorts.
This is where we kind of introduce the idea that there's no real dialogue. People just monologue and give exposition the whole movie.
The starting words are from the witches describing the prophecy in which Rip Torn will be killed by the king's son. I'm sorry, Rip Torn... playing
Max.
Spelling Max with two X's makes it Mayax.
It's two A's. Right?
Two A's.
It was two A's?
Yeah, two A's.
M-double-A.
Max. But yeah, so Max decides to just tell the king what's about to happen. He's like, yeah, so I'm gonna take your firstborn son and kill it, because I'm a boss like that. And to show you I'm a boss like that, watch me kill my own guys.
For no reason. Just his two wingmen kill themselves.
Yeah.
No reason. But whatever.
It's the king and two guards against Rip Torn, these two minions of his, and the three witches, and he decides to show his might by having his two minions kill themselves.
Yes. One of his guards is played by John Amos, and the two guards kill themselves by using their 3M self-stick hanging devices, which they just shoot up into the sky like Batman's grappling hook, and then they just kind of hang there. It's kind of funny how, for a movie with almost no dialogue, nobody's actually acting either. So it's like... They're not really acting with their bodies. The king, like, can't seem to even move his neck around. He's just standing there.
Well, I have a feeling they're not really having much dialogue with the director either.
No.
Yeah, it seems like the few that kind of know what they're doing will have the facial cues you can follow, but that's about it.
Well, the best actors in the movie are the animals. Yeah, so fast forward, that night, it's the king sleeping next to his wife in their little room, and...
They break open a glow stick and pour it on his throat.
Well, just this woman walks a cow through the whole village.
No guards.
Walks a cow into their room with no guards.
Just just bringing a cow.
It looked like the king slept in a tent, too. I'm not sure he even did have a house.
King of what?
Pour some glow sticks on his throat. Him and his wife somehow are not able to move because of this.
Well, you wrote glow sticks. I wrote gack splat. Or predator blood.
That works, too.
Yeah.
That works, too.
Definitely predator blood.
I also thought glow in the dark ecto cooler, but anyway.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it does.
They probably made it somewhere in the 80s, probably Japan.
Come on, guys. Hashtag bring back ecto cooler.
There's a recipe for it somewhere online.
Yeah, it's gross. It doesn't.
Too much work to make something this.
And it is a lot. It's so much work. It's like 10 different things you need to get instead of just high fructose corn syrup and green.
So then these witches proceed to force push the baby out of the mother and into a cow.
It like teleports. It's kind of gross looking, but
it's kind of gross. It is kind of creepy. I'll give them that. Especially at one point, there seems to be a baby hand reaching out of the mother or something.
Yeah, one of those like skin stretching things.
The thing I found funny with that too is you're moving this baby into a cow, and then like one scene later, she takes the baby out of the cow to go kill it by a fire. Like, why don't you just take the baby out? Like, why did the cow even need to be here?
You killed the mother anyway. Like,
and clearly, you don't need to worry about being stealthy because there are no guards.
Yeah. No one's paying attention.
Stab the baby. We've all seen the Game of Thrones. Just stab that. Yeah. But, I mean, it's a good use of practical effects with the cow.
Yeah. I'd have to say that.
Expanding.
The one. I don't know why they cheaped out on the face paint for the witches, but when they, a couple times, they have some good special effects.
They spent too much money on writers, that's why, for dialogue.
Alright, so speaking of, then they take the cow out to the field by a green fire, where they're going to kill the baby. First, they need to brand its hand for some reason.
It's the symbol of R. I should also point out, the main god of this movie is just a pirate noise. R. R-A-R.
I think most of the people are made after various pirate noises, or things you would shout when you are injured.
His gospel is, do what you want, because a pirate is free.
That's also another thing we're not mentioning, but like half the lines in the movie are just people yelling.
They're guttural noises.
Guttural noises and sound. Probably because most of it was animal casting, since they are the best actors in it. So she brands the baby, clearly showing that as the baby's hand does not flinch, the ginormous baby hand of that does not flinch as she burns it with this metal iron. She's about to kill it.
That baby just lived in a cow. It's been through some shit.
This is true.
There must have been a ton of nutrients in that cow because it came out like 10 years old.
So you think it was growth hormones? So a crazy man shows up and tries to save this baby by throwing his boomerang into the back of the old woman.
Like she wasn't even old. She just had a fucked up
shouldn't call her old.
Like, you put a bag over that, like, I'd still do it. Like, everything else is fine.
Because as we're about to find out, he stabs only her robe, and she just appears behind him, basically naked, despite still having the mutilated face, and tries to kill him. They get into a row, he throws her into the fire.
Did it explode?
I don't think she exploded.
I don't think the explosion started yet.
She didn't even fall in the fire.
Make, like, a classic witch cackle as she died.
Yeah.
She found her death quite hilarious.
Well, so did I.
Yeah.
She, like, tripped over the fire.
Yeah.
They don't really die, because the whole movie, there's three in the beginning, and there's three at the end. But he kills, like, three of them throughout the whole movie, but they're still there at the end, so I guess they don't really die.
I don't know how that works.
Yeah.
Also, I should point out, the fight is a horrible mishmash of, like, really far shots or extreme close-ups of faces.
So the man claims his new baby as his winnings from this fight, I guess.
His son through trial of combat.
I guess so.
Worst prize ever.
He brings it back to his village, where I swear when he first reels back, he looks like he's about to throw that thing like a football. only to hold it up, much like a prize from Zelda or the Lion King.
He does Lion King the baby a little bit.
And considering his village, I'm kind of surprised they're all happy to see he randomly found a baby and brought back another mouth to feed. Or why no one questioned where that baby came from.
I mean, that's more hands to work in the field when he gets older. That's all. The field of dirt. Because there's dirt everywhere. But whatever.
Which Yeah. He's
a dirt farmer.
While we're at that.
Might as well be.
They do appear to be dirt farmers.
Yeah, what agriculture was going on there?
I mean, they had
tools, but they didn't seem to have anything growing.
And despite the dust and dirt everywhere, there seemed to be an issue of flooding, perhaps, because all the houses were built on top of large pillars.
20 feet high. Yeah.
With only a rope to climb to get up there.
So the dirt can grow.
I mean, what happens when you get old? Do they just leave you up in your house? You're like, fuck it.
No, well, probably. It depends on where you are at the time. Yeah, if you're outside your house, it's like, if you can't get up the rope, bro, you're staying. Yeah.
Plus, once you die in the house, chances are you might decompose by the time they realize it. You're too far for anyone to really just come visit, and the smell's not going to be as bad.
That's true. You're always upwind.
And I mean, do they have like a chamber pot up there when they have to go to the bathroom, or do you have to climb all the way down the rope just to go out in the field and smell the deuce?
I don't know.
That could be what explodes. So, yes. We're getting a little ahead of ourselves, but Brian might have solved the mystery.
That's very true. Also, I gotta worry if there is any kind of flushing system. Do they have a way of warning the people that might be walking under your house at the moment?
Ernest scared stupid. That's where the Miat comes from.
Again, Brian's getting a little bit worse. Well, no, actually.
Miat, same shit.
Would you like to explain?
No, like, Miat, when I first heard it, it reminded me of the what they had to use to beat the goblins in the Ernest Scared Stupid. It was Miat, and it's just milk.
Then this old man is now in charge of raising this baby. He raises it to a child, teaches it how to use the crawl, I guess.
Whatever, boomerang things.
Yeah.
I think he called it like a capo or a caper.
Which he demonstrates by throwing at one of the other villagers.
Total dick move, like right into his turban or whatever he's wearing on his head.
I gotta wonder what would be happening if he wasn't wearing that. So I just, like, is this just the town dummy we can throw things at?
The problem is it totally knocked him off his guard, and that's becomes an issue. I'm calling foul play.
Well, yes, then the boy appears to be having an episode, at which point I thought we were entering the happening, as you just see some leaves rustling, but it turns out there is a nasty bear in the woods that pulls this man in and kills him very quickly and just dumps him aside for no reason.
He just grabs him by the leg, though. Like, the dude's, like, sticking out of the bridge. It's like Jurassic Park when the Velociraptor's at the very beginning when the raptor gets that
Shooter.
Guy. Exactly. So the bear crawls out with
blood all over his face.
Editing mistakes were, one second that's blood in his face, next second it's clean, then that's blood again, then it's clean again.
Well, they probably had to keep reapplying it, and he probably just kept licking it off. Like, you know what? Fuck it. That's a bear. Like, I'm not going to keep doing this.
Or as we also posited, maybe that bear died and they had to get another for reshoots. Because it seems very likely that many animals died during the making of this movie. But then the kid stares the bear down, and it happily leaves.
Yeah, the kid finds out he has force powers.
Yeah. At which point the father tells him he must tell no one. The kid runs away, seemingly forever, but probably not, because in the next scene he's running back as an adult. I don't know if he was just away that whole time.
Ran through his entire adolescence.
Yeah.
But now he has a dog.
Now he has gained a dog.
White dog.
And a small sword.
I'm assuming it's white. It may have been bleached.
Probably was.
The jury's still out.
He's given a hoe to go out and work on the dirt fields.
That's a tool that's used for farming. Not. Never mind.
Yeah, they go to a hill, but they don't seem to be doing anything on the hill. They're just moving grass around.
Yeah, well, they're moving grass to get to the dirt, so they can bring it back to their farm.
We'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they just started tilling that field to start planting. Maybe that was just the first day of agriculture.
Yeah, they're looking for dirt seeds.
Yeah, either way, it doesn't...
in the village, that would explain some things.
It doesn't go well for them, though, on the first day of farming.
As our hero, Dar, launches a
played
stick...
Played by Mark Singer.
Played by Mark Singer. Launches a stick over the hill, to which the dog runs up and sees that there's an army approaching and warns the others by barking, sort of.
That's what dogs do.
Very two-dimensional.
He didn't really even seem all that distressed by it. The dog just kind of stopped more than anything.
Hand-painted army.
I believe it's referred to as the Jun Horde.
The Jun.
Yes, the Jun Horde is approaching. To which the old man that raises Dar decides to face it down by standing still and letting them trample him to death.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that.
There's no other way to say it. This guy dies like a bitch.
Well, he draws a line in the sand with his sword and promptly trampled.
He stands there looking very, like, menacing, but does nothing else.
Literally nothing. Literally over.
Perhaps gripped with fear, I don't know, but does not move as they proceed to just trample over him and attack the village.
Well, maybe he was like, this kid has animal powers, maybe I can make invisible barriers with my sword. He really believed in himself.
Yeah, so this they proceed to attack the village, obviously easily knocking down the houses, which some of which explode, as we previously mentioned.
Just explode. They lit some on fire, and they just burst in giant flame balls. Like.
Not just fire. Not as though this is a very flammable house that caught on fire quickly. They explode as if there was something in there.
Maybe they were. It was chamber pots.
The chamber pots. Yeah.
Maybe that's what it was.
Dookie fumes just filled up the house. And
maybe they were saving it for fertilizer for the field. Every house had a lot of it.
Yeah.
You're trying to make more dirt.
Yeah.
That's the best explanation I could come up with, so let's go with that.
And that's where we get our first puppy murder.
Mm. Yes, the bat-winged helmed man that's leading this army.
Never has a name. He never has a name.
But he's in every 80s medieval movie.
Yeah, it's the bat-winged helm that's used for every medieval kind of movie like this. He's fighting Dar, knocks him out, throws him around, I believe, a bit, and then his dog tries to save him by pulling him to safety, which, how the hell he could do that, I don't know.
This dog, it's a mid-sized dog. It's not like a big, giant, Great Dane, you know, it's like...
Like barely a husky.
It's barely even the size of a husky, it's smaller than that. But, like, somehow it pulls this full-grown human, seemingly, like, a mile away from the village, with an arrow in it.
With a freaking crossbow bolt right in its flank.
While pulling him away, he gets shot with an arrow. I question the special effects again here, because they don't seem to shy away from hurting animals.
It's like, no, we didn't use a real arrow. But we did staple it to the dog.
Well, but that would not explain why later when Dar tries to give this dog a proper burial, he's carrying it around as though it's actually dead.
That dog is the best actor if it's alive. It's not a prop dog. That is not a prop dog.
No,
that was like,
it is clear that you do not have the budget to make a prop dog
dead
that good.
Dog. Its head was just like
flopping around,
not moving at all.
Tongue was hanging out. Yeah.
If that dog was not dead, it deserves an Oscar.
But Dar starts having eagle visions.
Mind you, the main character of the movie, Dar, has only had one line so far. He said father once. That was it.
I didn't write that down because I didn't remember what he said.
No, he said father. And it's been like a whole half hour already.
We are roughly a half hour into this movie. He's had 3 lines total. I think most of them were when he was younger. As an adult, only the one.
At this point, the jerk who got mauled by the bear has said more.
Way more. Way more.
He's dead.
Well, he also, as I said, he stations the dog with his father and the rest of the villagers in what we thought was a Pokeball.
Yeah, well, that's what...
They don't explain where that symbol comes from, either.
It's a
Pokeball.
But maybe it's to tell the audience, because basically what we start now is, like, the live-action Pokemon movie.
Yeah.
You gotta catch them all.
Goes around and starts collecting all these animals.
And ladies he moves on to.
And women,
Well, I thought this was funny because it's more of a 90s trope of the superhero does their work or whatever and then sets up gasoline so you could light it on fire and see their symbol.
Like the Crow.
Like the Crow. Daredevil. Okay. Other terrible movies.
I blocked that one out.
I did too.
Daredevil. For good reason.
Then he collects the ferrets.
Then he goes on. He's playing around with his newfound sword.
His hawk.
Then, stops to clean himself. Some ferrets come.
Well, he had a long afternoon of swinging a heavy stick around.
So he stops to clean himself.
Spent an entire minute of the film just on swinging around a stick.
Yeah, he's pretty sweaty from LARPing.
So when he stops to clean himself, the ferrets come along, they steal his gear, run off with it, his loincloth. He chases after them.
Oh, yeah, again, no pants.
And no vision, apparently, as he doesn't see a cliff that he easily walks over and falls into quicksand and starts to drown. asking the ferrets for help.
Ferrets think they're gonna have a payday. They're like, whatever, bro.
Yeah, they seem very okay with all this at first. Then inexplicably decide to help him.
He makes them help.
He uses powers.
Again, I don't think he can force them to do things.
He's staring at them really intently, and they started helping them. Okay.
He stared their free will out of them.
Yeah.
Well, that would again explain more of the fact that one of the ferrets decides to become a beaver and chew through the stick to drop it from the tree.
That was a freaking branch. It was a huge branch.
Yeah, a branch. I'm sorry. Yes, keep in mind, it's strong enough and big enough to carry this guy out. But also totally ignores that the other ferret is on the other side of this branch and totally gets dunked into this quicksand.
Like a real ferret.
Submerged.
Yeah, very quick.
For a long time.
And Dar doesn't exactly, like, he takes his time, like, getting that ferret out.
He first pulls himself out while the ferret's still struggling, hangs out on the side of this thing, just, you know, catching his breath or whatever. And then finally, once the ferret is completely submerged, decides to shove his hands in there and pull it out.
There's, like, little bubbles and stuff, too. Yeah. The bubbles stop.
I think that might have been part of his thing. He was just like, all right, I can still see some bubbles and it'll be okay for another minute.
No animal stand-ins.
Clearly not.
And also, I think that brings up a good point of that ferret probably in real life would just be able to walk on the quicksand, which means a stagehand probably was pulling it under the water.
Once again, treating these animals with the utmost respect.
They would have to do like multiple takes or they stop filming so the dude can come back over and dunk them under
under them. Then, now with his new ferret friends, he decides to venture on some more, and the hawk warns him that there is a panther nearby. Or there's a cat nearby that seems to be in some kind of distress. I don't know where the cat came from.
He starts seeing through the cat's eyes. That's what he thinks.
And then sees through the cat's eyes.
He's getting attacked by some
people. I don't know where the cat came from or what exactly they were doing with it. It seemed to be tied to a pole in the middle of nowhere.
They're trying to catch it.
They might have been Jungs.
Okay.
It was the priest.
I don't remember that, but the
big black cat's in danger.
The big black cat is in danger.
So the little white man comes to save him.
That's right.
So that means these guys were the police? Right. sorry. So, yeah, he proceeds to save this poor animal, at least from these guys, not from the stagehands that keep painting him, and gains a new friend in the tiger, panther, big cat. This is the point where, when mauling one of these people, you can clearly see that all the paint is coming off his paws. He's caught his first major Pokemon by walking through the tall grass, and he comes across a pond where we're met with boobs.
Huh? Yeah, a couple of bathing girls, bathing slave girls. What's the actress' name?
Tanya Roberts.
Tanya Roberts. So
as Joe pointed out,
you have the floor.
Yeah, she's clearly introduced boobs first.
you weren't quite right with this, but you do almost see her boobs before her face.
Yeah.
Well,
you absolutely see boobs.
Yeah, absolutely.
It wasn't where you're looking.
Tony has some big ass tits.
Yeah. And as soon as the breasts come out, so does the weasel. The dude starts playing with his ferret.
Although I'd also like to point out, she, as mentioned, there were two bathing women there. The other blonde woman just kind of disappears.
She was not as attractive.
Nope.
I guess, wasn't attractive enough, wasn't worthy.
They didn't want to pay her, she got no lines.
Yeah, not per cat.
She actually got mauled by the tiger.
Very possible.
That was the contract.
Lines I understand, but you'd think she'd at least get a scene walking off with the other or something. But anyway.
So, in typical douche fashion, he's like, ferrets, go take their clothes. Because then I can see the titties more.
Yeah, I have this great power I've discovered where I can talk to animals and make them do as I wish. So I think the best use is to have these ferrets steal her clothes.
Yeah.
I mean, I would too. So.
Which is weird. Okay, so the ferrets run away with her shirt. And then she walks out pulling a shirt out of her pants.
Like, she's got... She seems to... I would guess that was some kind of loincloth version of underwear.
It looks like she gave herself an atomic wedgie. And
it's pulled up over her shoulders.
Underpants. Well, no, because it started with, she already had some kind of underwear on while she was bathing.
Yeah.
She had what I would assume would be that version of a bra.
No, she had nothing. It was just around her waist.
But it was around her waist. Well, whatever this cloth was around her waist. There was two separate pieces when she first pulls it up. Yet when she gets out of the water, she's completely dry and now it's suddenly a full on dress.
There was no cutaway. There was no cutaway. She's out of the water.
But again, making it more disturbing that this other blonde girl is now just wandering on the floor is completely naked.
Well, so that's really fine. Elaborate onesie.
Most importantly, I want to know how to get a magic shirt pants.
I do too. Her and the Hulk, we need to find them. That's
true. Bruce Banner comes back down. He's like, it's okay, guys. I'll just pull up my shirt.
Where these come from?
You will still have to be dressed like her, though.
He is most of the time.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Get that buffalo knuckle.
Oh, God.
Then
rape.
Continuing to use this great animal power he's found, he threatens this woman's life with his newfound shine.
No. He tells a tiger to look menacing in front of her.
Yeah, well, same thing.
Yeah. Then he swoops up behind us and just be like, just don't move. Don't show any fear. I'll scare it off.
Swooping up behind her, like, we need to elaborate on that. He is up on her.
Yeah.
He has her tightly in his grasp. I'm pretty sure much explaining this by putting his tongue directly in her ear.
Almost.
She might have been penetrated.
Yeah, actually, you made a comment about you would have had sex with her by now. He might have in that moment.
He might have.
When he says the tiger looks menacing, what we mean is the tiger is so riddled with disease and weak from the paint that it's just lying there kind of lolling its head around, and this is the menacing.
Which, yeah, I do like at several points this big cat just moves its head around, which they put roars in after, even though its mouth is clearly closed.
It doesn't bare its teeth because its teeth have fallen out.
but as he tries to scare the tiger up, the panther away, it doesn't want to go. He's like, I just want to watch. I'm just going to sit here and I'm just going to watch. To the point where when he finally shoots it off, he moves behind them.
He just swoops up right behind.
All right, I'll walk
3 feet
this way.
Yes, sits right back down and starts watching again. Claims that she owes him his life, and he'll take payment in a kiss, which, again, just kind of jamming his tongue down her throat, and penetration, ?
No. They roll around for a bit. She's trying to fight him.
Yeah.
Well, at this point, they start scrapping.
She shows off her fighting skills.
Yeah. After this, forcible entry. They somehow talk, and she's like, I'm a slave. He goes, that sucks. She goes, no, see? And she has, like, whip marks.
No. No, this happens because when they're rolling around, he knocks her down into a doggy-style position and then pulls at her clothes to see the whip marks on her back.
Now he's like, oh, well, in that case, I'm not going to do nothing now. I want to talk to you now. You caught my interest now,
Now you're hideous.
is that a hero complex or is that you've probably been used, I don't want you anymore?
I don't know. I take it as, I must save you.
Yeah, actually.
He's like, run away. Come with me. I'm going to go with you. I must save you.
Yeah. Clearly it is not a I'm done with you because he proceeds to stalk her throughout the rest of this film.
That really is, for a good 45 minutes of the film, that's his primary motivation, is just getting laid by this girl.
So, Tanya Roberts, she is kind of attractive. I mean, she's Midge from that 70s show. It's the neighbor's mom.
It is young Midge.
Yeah.
So he says he will save her and she should run off with him, but instead she decides to go back for some reason.
She has to because they kill her family if she doesn't go back. That's what she says.
What family?
I don't know. They never show a family. I don't know.
We will find out shortly. The only family she tends to have is an uncle and the king, who's blind and half dead in the dungeon already.
Again, it's not really dialogue. She's just explaining what's happening.
That's it. All right, kid that needs saving, perhaps of his own. So she disappears, possibly with this blonde woman. They go back to be tortured and whipped or whatever. He tries to chase after her, wanders into a weird cave for reasons.
Was that the cave or was that the weird pear tree? Like the
it was a tree. With the lights on.
Yes.
Which, like a weird cracker barrel Christmas tree.
Is
that happening?
Well, it was getting dark, remember? And the tree had lights on it. So, I mean, yeah, they lit up in the night, didn't it? So he was going there, I'm guessing, because it was like, oh, something's lit up.
And there was soup. Yeah. Maybe he smelled
there was soup.
Oh, well, yeah. Yes. He does approach.
The tiger was like, I smell food.
He does go inside, sees a pot of soup stewing.
And a little drummer boy in a cage hanging from
He prioritizes the soup.
Yes, he totally ignores the boy for a while.
Well, I would have too. That kid looked the creepy.
Soup. Yeah, but, well, that should have been your first clue that maybe the boy hanging next to the soup is an indicator that the soup is not what you want.
Gollum-esque.
Which, sure enough, it turns out to be people soup.
Tiger's like, I said I smell food.
I'm not questioning the tiger's motives here. It's Dars that I question.
Yeah, the tiger smelled the soup. He looked like he was turned away, too. But I don't know if that's because, you know, you just smell paint fumes in his nostrils. Or
He's been licking black paint all day.
Yeah, that's true. He has no taste buds left.
I think he smelled the paint on that fake head that popped up and just knew that wasn't what he wanted.
I only taste copper now.
Finally springs this kid from the cage. The kid tries to run away, only to be enveloped in a...
These weird, tall, leathery-looking things, winged things, land
like a Miyazaki.
They look real freaky-looking.
Yeah, kind of bat creature-esque. They just kind of looked like flaps of skin.
Yeah, it's like if you took the man bat and, like, turned him inside out.
So there's a bit of that.
Like stretched out nutsack. That's all I'll be honest.
Yeah.
We
can't
answer on that. There is... Yeah. I did kind of think it looked like a scrotum, but,
We'll keep it classy here in the especially foyer
since,
podcast.
Especially since their face appears to be, like, the eyes, sort of a nose, and then just pulled down to the rest of them. I wasn't quite sure what was going on.
They do
there.
Have some sort of mouth hole because they vomit out like that acidic crap like the fly.
Yeah. So, yeah.
They wrap the sky up in their wings and like they move around for a bit and then like they open their arms and bones just fall out.
It's pretty much the worst hug ever.
Worst hug ever.
Well, they turn the guy, they like covered him in like, Fright Zone goop from He-Man toys.
Oh, man.
Or ooze.
This is creepy. Creepy dead-eyed child.
Oh, and they look like they want to eat Dar.
Oh, they are ready to eat Dar until his little bird friend lands on a bird statue post thing.
Yeah, they have a big old black, like, eagle statue that the bird lands on top of. And they're like, oh, it's with this guy? This guy must be cool.
Yeah.
And so they don't kill him.
It's now 45 minutes in at
this
point.
Hopefully not his cousin. But...
And my notes only say, losing interest.
it is true.
Yeah.
And they do kind of just taper off. Like
This movie does not start fast.
I have, throughout repeated points, wrote down, where's this going? I think at this point, wrote down, where's the dialogue?
Again, still
because again,
words.
At this point, there's been nothing said.
He didn't even talk to the kid in the cage.
No
words.
We stopped to have the small chat when he saved our slave girl princess, but since then, not a word has been spoken.
Well, the girl has, I think, the most dialogue in this movie.
Her or Rip Torn, I think.
They're just monologues. Yeah. They're not having a conversation, they're saying what's happening.
It is all monologue format.
This is what's happening. I'm going to tell you what's happening because we have not filmed this way we can figure it out if we don't.
Not even really in like an organic sort of way where this is going to come up or I've captured you, I'm going to kill you, let me explain my plan. It's literally just every couple seconds I'm going to explain what's happening at this point.
One detail we should point out before we move on, actually. The Birdmen do give him a special little amulet before he leaves.
The Birdman amulet.
Well, he pulls a sword because one scared him. And it just like grabs the sword and slides the amulet on it.
Puts it on the sword.
It's like, I don't care about the sword. Yeah. Here, take this.
Yeah.
And then we get to Rip Torn's hideout.
Yeah, we do get there now, yeah.
He approaches the town where the king had his tent. So the king had his tent in this little area, which now seems to be primarily empty. Apparently everyone
just walks in.
Yeah, just walks in.
No guards.
Under, again, the world's smallest gate. No guards, just a couple horses and little Sebastian
everyone is at the big ziggurat watching.
Well, yes, watching their children be burned alive.
Well, it is a spectacle because he's just straight up killing kids.
It is pretty great. Yes. I fantasize about myself.
Yeah, my favorite part being that it's not enough if he throws you in and you get burned alive, great, but if you try and struggle to get out, he has a kid pushing stick that he will happily shove in your face.
It was just like in A Christmas Story. Yeah. Santa pushed the slide.
I wish they had that camera angle as well. That would make this movie so much better.
Foot cam.
Although the way this kid gets out of this jam is equally fantastic.
Best rescue ever.
First of all, the kid's dressed like Scorpion from Mortal Kombat. I guess that's the official, like,
that's
sacrifice.
That's part of the sacrificial robes, yeah. Which I kind of wonder where they're getting them from. I also...
like, who's making all these
things? But you also got a question, like, maybe you guys should use less of this cloth on children you're going to burn and more of it to make pants.
Yes. Because
this movie is sorely lacking pants.
Further on, though, in the movie, before they go to sacrifice Kiri, they rip the robe off of her. Maybe by this point they've realized, like, you know, we should actually save her.
Yes, this is true. The first child wasn't enough. Rip Torn's character, Mayax, tries to throw another in, push it in with a stick, at which point Dar commands his
whatever it is.
Yeah.
Bird of prey of some sort.
I believe
it's probably Pig and Black too.
He commands it to save this child, which it takes its sweet time doing. Swoop and grasp. It just grabs that child and pulls him off into the sky.
No problem.
These razor sharp talons.
Jumped in this child's into back. This kid.
The kid's probably like, just let me burn.
Yeah.
The kid is old enough to talk. Like, it's beyond toddler.
He's a big kid.
And it's not like he's just flying a few feet above the ground. Like, he's up in the stratosphere.
They do once or twice cut to a shot of this bird flying off in front of the sun with a dangling child behind him.
Totally flies up, makes the bat signal up there, and drops back down.
It's majestic.
And oddly enough, does not seem to be coming back anytime soon.
I was thinking about it. It's like, you know, I'm not really that close with this Dar guy.
I gotta wonder.
But this
can't eat
feed,
his favorites.
I could eat this for like a month.
Yeah, the next scene isn't, you know, until dark, so there's a good bit of time in between. I can only imagine it's spent between Dar and this bird, you know, arguing whether or not he can eat him.
Kid's family is just at home eating dinner. I guess they seem pretty well over the whole...
they were kind of sad.
They were kind of sad.
They were bummed out.
Well, again, I don't understand that, like, child sacrifice is a big thing in this town. I get that. But you saw this one carried off by a bird. Wouldn't you question where it went?
They were just emotionally not ready
for
that. I don't know. Like, there are no trees anywhere. Where did birds come from? Only birds ever saw probably vultures.
I think they both just got nosebleeds out of nowhere. Just like,
I do believe, though, that was interpreted as a religious sign that this eagle swooped down and flew off with the kid.
Could be.
So maybe they thought he's in a better place.
I guess so.
But then Dar walks into their house, just out of nowhere, just walks into their house, and is like, I have something for you.
Throws up a burlap sack.
Yeah.
This pile sack of bones he's been carrying on his back for the past couple minutes, it just, not moving, not making a sound. Again, I question if the child was still alive or not. But thankfully, I guess it was.
It was a little girl, right?
No idea.
I believe they said it was a girl. You couldn't tell.
It was a blonde or
a blonde or
an androgynous child. Just dropped off.
Really pale, blonde hair, long blonde hair. Like,
you don't see the kid again.
It's
irrelevant. Like all the kids in the movie.
Pretty much. The guy says he owes him his life or what owes him anything.
Again, more monologue. More exposition explaining what has happened.
Yeah.
He even told the story of what happened to the king's unborn son. Because no one knew the story beforehand, so he had to tell it to Dar so he knew.
He was winking the whole time. And when I press on your foot and say, hello, Mr. Thompson.
It's like, oh, you're new here. Let me tell you the backstory of this town.
Yeah. Tell you about the son that disappeared that we think has a mark and can talk to animals.
And again,
sound familiar?
All Dar says was, I have something for you, and okay. The whole scene.
Proving most of this monologue has nothing to do with Dar.
Also, I think at this point, we're about an hour into the movie.
At least.
Close to it. And we're still introducing characters. Like, they're not done introducing main characters.
Yeah, nothing has been wrapped up or accomplished whatsoever. We've had an attempted rape and an attempted child murder. Like, nothing has been successfully done.
It's actual child murder and an attempted child murder.
One and a half. Questioning whether or not the main character can actually speak English.
Yeah, it's not entirely clear who the villain is right now.
I kind of stopped taking notes at this point.
Yeah.
Because
I had long since given up on that.
He shows up, saves this kid, finds out this is the guy he needs to fight or something, because he's got his woman.
He saw the girl on the ziggurat, the girl he was trying to follow. Yeah. So he went to the town trying to follow this girl.
And
you know,
then said, screw it, I'm done, and left?
Well, no, because I think he said that he saw them taking them somewhere.
For the Jun horde. He asked the guy where the Juns come from.
That's right.
Oh, okay, because he wanted us to take care of them first.
Because he didn't see where they were taking her until after he met up with John Amos, which is coming up.
Which, why would he be after the Jun herd if he says later that he needs an army to get them, which the small group he has isn't much, but certainly more than him, this big cat
They didn't explain that part in the movie yet.
But they explained everything else!
They didn't, because he can't talk, so you can't explain what he's trying to do, because they don't let him talk. You don't want to pay him that much money.
At which point, I guess Rip Torn just suspects that he's the king's kid for unknown reasons. So he equips one of his minions with an eye ring.
Well, that's because when... And the girl was there because when everyone was bowing to the eagle, taking
the
bird,
the girl
he
was there,
standing up.
And
she was standing
up.
At him. Yeah. Yeah, but he was the only guy standing up. So Rip Torn's like, Mayax. It's like,
Max.
Who the hell is this guy? What's this?
So that asshole.
He calls his witches. He's like, witches!
Yeah.
They have the little cauldron, and like they start showing stuff. And like they're trying to follow them in their cauldron.
Even though they seem to be able to see things anyway, they need the help by equipping one of these minions with this creepy eye ring that activates when it's near this guy.
So he's got the secret decoder ring.
Yeah.
It is Dakota Ring. It's giant.
Or he might have become a lantern. I'm not sure which. The red lanterns? So they chase him down to this
watering hole.
Yeah, a small watering hole where the big cat seems to be trying to clean himself of all this black paint.
So much paint.
He tries to get a drink. The minion sees it's him. He removes some of his arm guard, allowing them to see the burn mark on his hand, letting them know who he is. So they, of course, get the order to kill him. They throw one of these ropes down, try to strangle him. Ben, it seems to be going pretty well.
So tiger comes through.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so the tiger
turns over.
Gets mauled by a panther.
Yeah, this big cat comes in, mauls the dude, knocks him down. He's no longer strangling Dar. Just mauls that guy to death, and then, like, that's it for him, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he starts chasing him.
Chases the other guy who gets on a horse.
This is when they fall into the trap that is conveniently there. It's a pitfall.
Yeah, a good over a 6-foot hole that apparently they were able to set up somehow. I don't know if they dug that in the last 2 minutes or something, but the tiger falls in, and the guy's kind of laughing about it and having a good time until he gets conked over the head.
He's about to shoot tiger with a crossbow.
Oh, that's, about to shoot him with a crossbow, gets smacked over the head, and then kicked into this pit by
John Amos and his sweet bow staff skills.
Sweet bow staff skills.
John Amos is playing Seth.
Yes. With his manservant. His Robin, his Bubbles the Monkey. I don't know what
his
the
lady
hell.
Boy.
I don't know what this relationship is. Looks a little shady.
Yes, he's the father of the woman in Coming to America. Or, I'm sure no one probably knows this, but the father on Good Times 2, same dude, John Amos.
Or Die Hard 2.
Die Hard 2.
Don't forget Die Hard
2.
He pulls that wicked double cross.
Gets thrown in a jet engine.
As Dar comes around the corner, him and his little man-child do a quick bow spin hello, which Dar comments on his amazing bow staff skills from this.
Yeah.
Well, he wants more skills so he can, like, you know, get the ladies and stuff.
So. I guess, yeah.
He's been practicing watching the Star Wars kid.
I mean, at this point, all Dar has done is just swing a stick over his head. He doesn't know you could actually twirl one from the middle.
I guess that is a new concept to him. They're hanging around a fire. He proceeds to make this whole situation a little creepier by showing the kid his ferret and all the treasures it stole. The kid finds the eyeball ring. He puts it on and gets kind of possessed by it, I guess, or something. It's the one ring to rule them all. He doesn't want to take it off, even though it's creepy and doing bad things.
Yeah, I don't know why anyone would put that ring on.
Yeah. He also somehow, upon grabbing this ring, totally misses the large necklace that he then notices pulling out from the slave girl. As it appears to be, she was a princess that they are trying to save.
That's the princess necklace?
It's the princess necklace, apparently.
One of the witches was married to Wayne Gretzky. Sorry.
Wayne Gretzky.
Sorry, like...
This just in from the internet.
I'm guessing the witch that had the most lines, I'm guessing, because, she's married to Wayne Gretzky. And she's in Police Academy 5. She was illegal with her own. Huh?
Why would you assume it was the one with the most lines?
Because she has a picture next to her name in the IMDb.
Okay.
That's my guess. I don't
know. So they're talking to John Amos. Cars are going by in the background.
Yeah, straight up a car just drives by.
It's okay.
A little mishap there. The
smog monster from Lost was in there.
John Amos gets very intense eyes and starts threatening him and asking him about this necklace. More exposition about who it belongs to, why they're after her, and so on. At which point, him and the kid try to get some sleep. Dar stares at them creepily and looks kind of stoned out as he hangs out by his fire.
The kid takes the ring.
Yeah,
I mentioned that. Sorry, I was distracted by Wayne Gretzky's wife.
Okay, apparently.
Very professional.
Yeah, so Dar, looking stoned out, just lets the bird launch into the stratosphere, or I don't know where it went.
Forward in time.
Yeah, a different time zone entirely, as the sun is up wherever this bird is, despite the fact it left minutes ago.
Was this the one where the bird is, like, just in the middle of the screen, like, flapping its wings, and the moon is just there, not moving, like, nothing is moving? Is that that part?
I think that's on its way back from this.
Yeah, I think this is after that.
Clearly it's daytime.
But yeah, this is where it's flying around. It's clearly daytime wherever it is, where these people are, even though he flew away just moments before and flies back moments after, perhaps with jet fuel. We don't know. Or he has mystical powers of his own. So they know now where they're taking this girl, though they try and set up a trap.
Have they said the relationship to the girl to them yet? No, right?
The boy whispers it to Seth. I keep wanting to call him John Stamos.
Don't do that. totally different people.
I know. Yeah.
Totally different people.
Yeah. There's only one person that can have a mullet in this movie. the kid does whisper to the fact that this is, you know, his cousin. They need to save her. They know where she is now. They try and set up a trap with this riverboat police system that they have.
I don't understand.
Boat on a rope?
It is a boat on a rope.
Which, in the Hawk's vision, just appeared to be a boat. Or the previous shot.
The rope is kind of unclear.
Yeah,
the rope is very unclear.
I mean, they're pulling themselves across the river, and then the priests show up, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then howl like some kind of wild animal.
Some crazy noise. And then the next things that unfold, I'm not too clear on.
Because there's no one to explain it.
I needed somebody doing this. I needed someone.
Well, like some 3 or 4 minutes till the next explanation.
Like a poorly choreographed little battle.
If Daniel Stern could have been doing a voiceover explaining to me what was going on, I would have appreciated it.
From the voice of this young prince boy.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Telling the story of how he grew up. Would you like to attempt an explanation?
No, I would like someone else to.
Okay.
They pull their boat to the shore, and they're pretending to be, like, the boatman to take them across the shore. Yes. But, like, while the main female character, Tyria, her name is.
Kiri.
She, like, breaks free, like, fighting one of the guys. And he's trying to drown her in retaliation, just drowning her, like, I don't care.
She kicks him right in the beanbag.
She does.
He takes it like a champion.
He's like, oh!
Which, I have to say, especially for an 80s fantasy movie like this, good to give her some shots in like that. You know, she's not just a damsel in distress. She does try and fight back, at least.
And it's pre-Red Sonja, too, you know? Yeah, so he's trying to strangle her, like, legit just drown her in the river. And, Seth's character starts fighting them. And then the fight kind of... There's like seven of them, but like...
It should also be mentioned at this point, for whatever reason, our three heroes on this boat decide to fight them. Seth starts it off by just ripping that robe off and showing his
pants. No pants.
That's when Duel of the Fates starts.
Yeah.
No pants.
His leather loincloth strappy thing.
Yeah.
It's really just like underwear and suspenders. I don't know.
So basically, if you ever wanted to see John Amos's butt cheeks,
this is the movie for you.
It really looked like they went to the censors and was just like, what is the minimum amount of this guy's underwear to cover? And designed his garment to do that.
I almost think they just went to, like, you know, some F&M shop and was just like, this looks vaguely medieval, right? Let's throw it on.
Why not? Yeah. Why not? Covers his junk, so let's go.
Hollywood Yard Sale.
Beastmaster, a.k.a. Fuck Pants.
What is your title for this movie by this point?
It's Fuck Dialogue, Fuck Pants. And Fuck Animals.
Two hours of your life.
Still better than the child who also, I believe, at this point rips off the robe to reveal a diaper?
Pretty much. Again, no pants.
I mean, this kid's got to be, what, like 12, 13 or something
and
that?
Yeah, and it's the most half-assed loincloth.
He looks like Mowgli from the Jungle Book.
Yeah, he does look like Mowgli.
And I've seen entirely too much of him.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird.
He's supposed to be a prince, but he seems more like... What was that kid that hung around with Johnny Robert. Quest?
Listen, Black Face Tiger is enough. Yeah. One episode, please.
All right.
Let's relax.
So anyway, fight ensues. They get on this boat.
Take some prisoners?
Yeah, they take three of these priests as prisoners. They tie them to a post on this boat.
Something. I don't
know. Yeah, there's some weird post on the boat. Like, I don't know.
They start pulling themselves away. They're not moving fast enough, so the girl decides to lose some weight and kicks this boat
because
off.
Like 2 seconds behind these priests apparently was another set of
horse archers,
like from out of nowhere to show up.
Right.
So they are pulling the boat across the water, and I guess to go faster, she kicks the three prisoners into the water so they drown to death. I mean, whatever. They try to kill her, so whatever.
That's fine. And of course they're not going faster because there's no current on this. It's not even a river, it's like a lake.
Yeah, I want to point out at this point,
in the water,
this girl has more dialogue, fought more people, and killed more enemies than our main character.
For the most part.
Not even for the most part. Like, he hasn't really killed anyone by himself. He's ordered his animals to.
He stabbed two guys at this point.
He did stab
in an earlier fight.
Fair enough.
And some
but,
really...
like, she's more proactive than he is.
Yeah.
I'm just saying maybe this is her movie. She's the Beastmaster.
I don't know. So there's no current, and they just...
No oars.
No current, no oars. They decide the best method of getting away now is to cut the rope.
Yeah, they cut the rope they were pulling, so there's no rope now.
So they're just slowly floating down this river with these archers after them.
Somehow
it works. For that matter, also, the archers are firing at this boat, repeatedly hitting the same post, but they can't seem to hit any of the people on it. Shows a level of skill.
Well, like I told
Ryan
while we were watching it, like, the post looked like a dragon, so maybe they thought they were killing the boat.
Listen, they went to the same school that ends up being the school that teaches the stormtroopers. Like,
Or any of the guards ever in this movie.
Yeah. Worst guards ever.
Yeah. They pull them, or they somehow get to the other side of this river.
Fast forward,
they're storming the castle.
Yeah, it does pretty much just jump to storming the castle. Oh, that guy, Sako, the guy Kitty saved, we learned that he can somehow talk to hawks?
Yeah. The hawk shows up.
He can talk at hawks. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's a question whether or not he understood him, but like he seems to because a message was sent along that they need his help.
That was as close to dialogue as this movie will allow.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I honestly think that was just thrown there for like comic relief.
Yeah.
Because he was like, oh, okay, I don't know for sure,
but like, and you know, some kind of explanation as to how he knows what the actual
Daniel
plan
Stern.
Is.
Yeah. Daniel Stern.
And I mean, and that hawk was sassing back.
Now this guy can't talk to hawks.
Yeah, again.
But he thought he fancied himself a beastmaster.
Again, your only dialogue is exposition, and very little of it, well, throughout most of the movie. In fact, I should also mention the second time major bit of dialogue from our main hero is once again done directly into the ear of this poor girl.
It's funny because the movie kind of plays out almost like a silent film, but without the cut-in text to let you know what's going on. Yeah.
Well, again, I think that cut-in text is those scenes after the action where one or two people just explain the entirety of what's happened so far.
Yeah, I think this is where we find out that the king is being held prisoner, yes. And that the king is... this girl's uncle, which
been
is
blinded at this point, too.
He's been blinded.
Which is weird, because Dar is the king's son. Mm-hmm. So, and this other kid is the king's son, so...
Listen, this is medieval times. Don't you judge.
I'm just saying, like, I mean, it's probably by marriage, because his mom died, so it can't be the same mother, but, like, still, that makes her his cousin.
Yeah.
But whatever, that's cool.
Where's the king's brother? Why isn't he doing anything?
Yeah, actually, you don't know which side of the family this... girl is related.
Yeah, it's probably the new wife's or the new mother's family, but still.
Which is creepy.
Yeah. It's a little, you know.
Also at this point, because, again, it's been a while since we've had some exposition, so let's get some more. As they invade the castle and find out that people are being turned into beast monster things.
I think they were Death Guard, they were called.
Yeah.
By strapping them down, putting more S&M gear on them, putting a con worm in their ears.
Leather.
With a little bit of the mutagen.
Yeah, they really did get a creepy crawler in the ear. And then they just dumped the plastic goop as well.
Yeah.
Mm. Like, here's the whole thing.
And then threw the leather mask on and called it a day.
Guy's freaking out because that thing's hot when it comes out of that oven.
And boy, does he flip out.
He sure does.
He hates those ferrets.
Yes, because they notice some keys they decide they need to get through this castle, even though... at this point, the girl proves that she knows what she's doing as she sneaks away through a side entrance that no one knows.
I wrote double cross ?
Yeah, like, I thought she was like... she walks off while they're talking, pulls like a candlestick, the wall opens, she passes through there only to, I guess, grab a new set of clothes, which, again, new set of clothes.
No pants.
Not much more than she had on before. Yeah, certainly no pants.
Yeah.
She picked up some gear, too. She
got
some gear.
She got her hair piece ninja star.
She's gaining more clothes as everyone else is losing more.
Yeah. I mean, in all fairness, you know, she's fought the most, so she has the most experience.
That's true. Mm-hmm. She did collect all the loot. That's what it is.
Yeah, this is fair.
She got first
dibs. This is her upgrade.
On the treasures.
Yeah. This is her chance to do an upgrade. While they're making Bebop and Rock City down in this dungeon, they decide they need this set of keys, so he just ties the ferrets to some rope and
he just
dangles them down there.
Stealthily.
No stealth required.
Well, yeah, the guy doing putting the con worm in his ear just straight up notices him.
Well, it's like right next to his head. Yeah. It's like the keys are right behind this guy's head. And there's a ferret in between the two of them.
Yeah,
and that's it.
Total ferret in the face.
Yeah. So, he just spins around, freaks out. The ferrets get knocked free somehow.
Yeah, and the...
This beast monster proceeds to just go berserk and starts killing the dense floss that they used to tie down the berserker. They didn't even tie it down before the...
That seemed to be an afterthought, which I don't understand. But...
smashing through all the doors.
Yeah, it's trying to knock down doors, but yet they didn't want to tie it down before they turned it into the monster. Like, I don't get it.
Maybe they realized that wasn't going to do anything, since they just smashed through it all anyway.
In all fairness, it has the closest thing to pants. Because it's it's a
loincloth,
but like their boots come up to like their thighs, so close to the pants and the whole
covered in studs and spikes.
And spikes, you know,
much like the giant gloves on its arms.
But yeah, so come to find out, they didn't even need the keys to begin with, because where the king is kept unlocked.
Yeah, so when they get there, they find it's unlocked. So
with
the keys
multiple
are
ways in and out.
Yeah. But he's blind, so he doesn't
know. They get in, they go to the king, they find his eyes have been removed, at which point Rip Torn decides to lock them in briefly, Before the tiger shows up again and is like, screw that plan. So he decides to get in on the other side of the door of this dungeon and try and lock this tiger out. One of these old witches, or witches, I can't call them old, tries to attack Dar. I think somebody somehow shot something in his eyes.
Yeah, oh, one of the witches, yeah, she threw some glitter at him.
Well, she glued.
It was a sparkler.
Sparkle.
He's getting a little cry, I think, going on there.
Yeah, he can't see for a moment until he finally realizes he can see through the beast's eyes and realizes how stupid he looks and just stabs her.
Yeah, stabs her right in the JJ.
Sure does.
Pins her to the ceiling with it.
Yes.
And twists it around.
Yeah, and twists it around. Drops her like a sack of rocks. Presumably being the end of her, but they, as previously mentioned,
still three witches.
Yep, they just keep coming back, so whatever.
At this point, we're like 6 hours into the movie.
There's like a good 10 minutes of like this Death Guard guy chasing the damn ferrets around.
Yes. Which finally, when the ferrets show up with these keys, Dar has the balls to say, "You're late."
Yeah. And really, I could have used some yakety sacks.
That's true.
That would have helped.
Yeah, they're just running all over the place. He's chasing them through pipes they have for unknown reasons.
You would have had the witches running around too, though, in like not much clothing.
That's why they go in different doors.
Well, they were already doing that anyway.
Yeah, every one of these doors conveniently has a little like ferret hole for them to run through.
Yeah, everyone in the movie was pretty much dressed like they had just gotten back from a Benny Hill chase.
Yeah, so they manage to escape into some lower dungeon with a giant skull head.
Yeah,
the whole thing with that is not explained.
I don't quite understand its purposes.
Like the toilet or something.
Yeah. It does basically seem like their toilet, which the tiger goes down first, followed by the king and his son, the little child. The girl goes down after, at which point the giant skull head is dropped down on top of it, trapping Dar until the girl just inexplicably shows up again. And is just like, hey, let's go this way instead. I don't know why or how. They are chased out of the wall. They try and climb down. This beast's trying to get after them.
It's like a cliff. Like they're outside.
Yeah.
There's a hatch that goes to a cliff. And they're climbing down the cliff. And this beast thing is chasing them. And trying to cut the rope with
his studs. It looks like just endless dark pit below them.
Yeah, none of this near the ziggurat at all.
He's trying to punch the rope.
He's punching the rope and sparks coming off the rope and stuff.
Trying to get through punching this rope. They finally pull him through. He drops down into the black nothingness, presumably to die. But then they fall conveniently right into a hay pile. Driven by the guy he's helped before.
Assassin's Creed
style. Yeah, they totally Assassin's Creed. But like, the berserker guy should have fallen.
Yeah, exactly. They fell in the same spot as this berserker. Yeah, the guy just rides away with them. I don't know where he was or what was
going on. Rides past the ziggurat, which is not near any sort of cliff.
And he has a torch, so you think they would have seen that. But
convenient geography.
Well, no, at that point, they do close the gate.
He sends the ferrets ahead so they can chew through the rope, which will somehow raise the gate. And yet, once they get through, he cuts the rope, which lowers the gate.
Yeah, no idea. I mean, maybe like counterweights.
Yeah, some pulleys. Kind of mechanics are at work that doesn't make sense.
It's like that video game convention of you shoot the controls to an elevator.
Exactly.
You needed to go.
Or makes it so the door shuts and cannot be opened again.
So I will point out that one of those ferrets does, like, straight up bite a guy right in the ding-dong.
He does, indeed. Of course. Because store nuts for the winter.
Yeah, it's an 80s animal movie, so somebody's getting bit in the crotch by an animal. Yeah. While the other animal, again, proceeds to just launch its way through this rope.
I have no idea what happens at this point.
At this point, they gather elsewhere.
Together.
Well, no, this is
at this point, they gather together elsewhere to try and form a plan.
Yep.
At which point, the king just decides to say, like, you're an asshole, I want nothing to do with you.
They're at the top of the ziggurat now, aren't they?
No. Now they've gotten out.
Yeah, okay. They've escaped this point.
This is where they're gathered outside.
Okay, yeah.
And the king says, you know, I don't know who this freak is, but I want nothing to do with him, despite the fact he just saved me.
Well, no, because the king's like, we need to get our people together to attack right away.
Yeah, right now.
And Dar's like, but yeah, that'll bring their army to, we don't have an army.
Yeah,
so
we don't have an army big enough.
You're all wimps, there's like two of you.
It's like a bunch of old people, some old ladies, old dudes, like a blind king.
Yeah, okay. This little kid in a diaper
ends up being John the Amos plan is, they kind of go with anyway.
Also in a diaper.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, he's like, well, you're a coward then. We need cowards. You're like a freak.
Yeah.
And he sends him away, not knowing that it's his son.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Dar walks away, and he has a little single tear.
He's sobbing. Yeah. He's
like crying. They gave him some eye drops.
Yeah. Single tear.
He's creating a flood of tears.
Point of note, at this point, he's hanging out with his big cat and drawing Pokeballs in the sand.
Yeah.
Again, completely unexplained.
But flashback to the king. It's the king talking with John Amos' character, Seth. And the king's like, we'll get 15 people, and we'll go storm the gate. John Amos is like, we're screwed.
We're
screwed.
We're all gonna die.
We're doomed.
Yeah, finds out this evil eye ring has let them in on all his plans. He pokes it with a stick.
He does poke the eye. He pokes the ring with a stick.
Throws it in the fire, which it too explodes.
Explosions! Yep.
And then they just get captured?
Yep.
Off screen, yeah.
Just, off screen.
Yeah, off screen somehow. They get captured. Yeah.
Unseen.
Just happens.
Well, yeah, whatever.
And that's when they're at the top of the ziggurat.
Yes.
Because he's going to sacrifice Kiri?
Yes.
Kiri, he's going to sacrifice all of them, yeah.
Well,
all
eventually they're going to kill all of them. She's going to go first. So, the king's on some kind of...
She's acquired even more clothing now, because she's wearing the scorpion outfit.
Yeah, yeah, they've thrown that over.
But it is promptly ripped off.
It is promptly ripped off, but now... John Amos once again pulls his robes up.
No. You gotta understand that same... That dude, that kid was saved by the eagle.
Sako.
That's really... I had to check this out. Sako shows up to where Dara is like, we need your help, because they've all been captured. Because he explained what happens, because it was off screen. Captured. Come save them. So he brings two brown horses, and then Dar rides away on a black horse.
Yeah. I'm telling you, they had extra spray paint.
Yeah.
And again, no one's guarding the gate.
Nobody.
Again, this major sacrifice, everyone's at the temple, no one's guarding the city.
Like, I don't know if you noticed this, Brian, but there are only, like, two horses in the whole movie. They just reused them.
That's true. That's true.
Little Sebastian.
Little Sebastian.
Yeah, not forget Little Sebastian. he comes storming in. Just tosses his ferrets aside and next in John Amos's crotch, so they can bite through his ropes and release him. Yeah. At which point he then just promptly rips off the robes and reveals his leather singlet or whatever.
Someone throws him a sword and says, I don't want this shit, and gives it to the kid.
It's like
toast, man. Oh, and the kid is just wearing, it's an even worse one.
He's wearing nothing.
He's been wearing.
Like, it's like borderline child form.
It's the thing,
I think they just took paper towels and showed him on the
car. Honest, like, we so would terrible. Be seeing this kid's pubes if he were old enough to grow them.
Yeah.
You know? I'm saying
it's true.
That is so true.
It is so true.
But, and you see way too much of his ass as he climbs the cigarette.
This little kid.
He's climbing up. He's fighting people on his way.
The witch, the witch is like, this is it. This is the prophecy. He's gonna come kill you, the unborn son.
That's it, bro.
Yeah. At which point, I don't know why he doesn't just stab her right there, run over to the king, stab him, and be like, all right, at least I got something accomplished.
Whatever.
But and this is the big... Instead, he wants to fight him. Because he was prophesied to kill him, so that seems like the best move.
So this is the big fight between Meax
and Dar.
Dar.
So they're not even fighting. He's fighting all of the guards, like all the priest guards.
Jumping through the pit.
Dar is
jumping over the pit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so...
And Meax is threatening the king.
Doing flash dance moves.
Yeah, so Meax holds a knife to the king and stabs the king, right?
Yeah, he stabs the king in the gut.
And so Dar comes over and stabs Meax in a wet, soggy fart of a climax to the fight. He just jabs him in the stomach.
That's not the end,
but that's like the climax of the fight.
Yeah. There's still like 45 minutes of movie left.
Yeah, he then goes to kill the witch again. Only one at this point. Throws a knife in her back, or the little boomerang.
Yeah, she flies away like a bird.
Yeah, once again, just she becomes a robe and turns into a dove. Which
they should have had his eagle eat it, but, they missed the opportunity there.
So it turns into
once again, I assume that happened off-screen and will be explained by someone later on.
Again, to point out, the very first prophecy said in the movie which you would think would be the culmination of the movie, is that the unborn son is going to kill Mayax. Happens with 45 minutes left of the movie.
Yes.
and he's not even killed by Dar.
Yeah, and by that, he's not even killed by Dar. He's about to kill Dar, and then the ferret jumps on him and rips his neck open and drops him into the fiery pit.
And they explode.
And they explode.
Explosion. Yeah.
Ferret
explosion.
Included.
Yeah, there is a ferret sacrifice.
Yeah, such a sad moment. Dies.
That really is the lowest point of the film.
Yeah.
That was like, you know, the most heartfelt, touching moment.
They dropped the ball on the score, because most of these moments had no music to them.
None of them.
Yeah.
Music in general, not
there
very
is
good
music,
this.
But it's the most genericest of
yeah,
music.
Yeah, it's very lacking.
Because I guess, like, I didn't take any notes on the music at all, because I didn't honestly notice.
Yeah, there wasn't really any music.
Yeah, it's very much background music. It's not actually giving anything to the scene.
But the scene would have been better.
Oh, it
could have.
Oh, for sure.
But at the same time, maybe there was music, because I mentioned during the movie that
again,
it seemed like the further into the movie we got, the lower the sound
that
got.
Is true.
Like,
that
I kept
true.
Having to raise the sound over and over again.
Let's also not forget, this is Leisure Studios. Maybe they didn't have the time. Or
halfway through, the sound guy took the day off.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll just let it run.
I'm on my break.
That's how we're going to edit these podcasts, too, by
judging by the rest of the movie, it's possible they were like, you know what, the boom mic keeps getting in the shot, let's just take out the boom mic.
Yeah, we don't need that.
We don't need mics.
Don't need that.
Just take them out.
We can't actually.
What are we recording?
There's no dialogue, so who needs mics?
You can't mic the actress because they're not wearing any clothes.
No clothes. No clothes.
Yeah, so at this point, our major villain that they've set up throughout this movie that's had all these lines, that's done all these things, is taken out.
He's
of
dead.
The equation.
There's still mm-hmm. half. Like,
and there's still
2 hours left in the movie.
Yeah.
That's the longest movie ever.
Yeah, it does, but definitely drag.
In an I told you so moment, they look out over the cliff, and you see that weird 2D painted dust cloud.
The Ghostbusters flying cloud.
Yeah, heralding the arrival of the Jun Horde.
The Jun Horde is coming, just like Dar said. So now we know that this is the last fight, which should have happened before.
For real deal, yeah.
But whatever. That's
so
fine.
They start singing, "Let's get down to business to defeat the Juns."
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
wow.
Yeah, they start making a man out of people.
They start making a man out of people.
So, yeah, they rally
except
up
the little prince, because he's.
Despite the fact they still have no army, they position things as best they can, start throwing some dirt in the moat and everything.
Which is
the moat is made out of tar.
Yeah, it's tar moat.
Yeah.
It's tar moat.
It is black. So.
Yeah. Did they ever say that, though?
No, but it's black. You can look at it.
There is a scene where he walks in the first time he goes to that
the
tower.
Tiger swam through it or something.
True.
The first time he comes to the town, he does look over the side of the bridge and drop a stone into the tar, and it makes like a...
Kind of, oh, really?
Yeah.
I totally didn't even notice that.
Yeah, I didn't really pay attention to that myself.
Maybe he was eating too much bacon popcorn.
So, Dar sends his bird off with this bird talisman that he obtained from these sack creatures earlier, presumably hoping to call for help.
Which
would have been nice if they gave him a name.
Yeah.
Like, they never tell
anything.
Him.
Yeah.
Like, nobody even talks about him.
Nobody.
We'll call them the Scrotoids.
Scrotoids.
Yeah. At this point, I mean, it's been like 6 hours since you've seen these people. Yeah. Like, you forgot they're here.
The major plot points seem to be explained over and over again, and then these side things happen, and nothing is explained about them.
Right.
People show up that have no real meaning or purpose, but they'll repeatedly show up. But they're never given names.
Yeah.
I mean, again, our main villain, as we're about to find out, never given a name, barely given any screen time.
Speaking of.
So the army shows up. Our bat-winged helmed villain, who is, I guess, the major villain of this.
Known only as the Jun leader.
Known only as the Jun leader. They start to attack the town. Half of them fall in the moat. Their big plan is to send someone out with a... flame, so they can light the moat on fire.
Mind you, it's 30 feet away from where the gate is.
Yeah.
They couldn't throw it, they couldn't shoot, wrap it in an arrow, shoot it.
This guy is shot down, and so he can't light the moat on fire. So the king, or prince, whatever, runs out there, grabs the torch, and tries to bring himself. He is then shot
immediately
as well.
At
this point, we are questioning, why doesn't someone throw something in there? Can't they fire a flaming arrow at
Can't
it?
Can't the bird just fly in?
Well, the bird is gone.
Oh, that's true, the bird is gone.
Presumably, the moat goes around the majority of this town. Go to one of the further walls and just throw it there, or have an entrance there.
Like
something.
I said, you could have just taken a bucket out of the moat, poured that on the ground, have a little trail, and lit that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, for that matter, they covered it with dirt and seemed like a lot of hay. I'm sure a lot of that hay would have caught pretty quickly and easily.
So all the horses are catching on fire.
So, no, this is a badass moment.
Yeah.
So the girl runs out, and so she grabs a torch and lights the first guy on fire who comes out of the moat. Well, so then Dar is like, whoop-ah! And like drop kicks into the moat, which explodes.
Yeah, immediately explodes.
Giant explosion.
Like Michael Bay caliber.
Yeah, like someone just dropped a bunch of napalm on him.
And so now it's on fire. And the horses are dying, people are dying. And then they're like, fuck it, we don't care. And they go through it anyway.
At that point, they're okay, burning, too. So they just cross over, they find apparently a dry
patch.
Oddly enough, at this point,
it seems that lighting the moat on fire only showed them where it is so they can just jump over it.
Yeah.
Because fire is apparently not a problem as long as they don't step in the
actual guys, these lazy cowards only went 10 feet out with the star. We can just walk
So they do that. I believe they try and drop the gate, which doesn't do anything.
No, the gate's down at this point.
Yeah, the gate is down.
Yeah, all these people have been just hopping over it to get out.
Right, its value as a fortification is completely discredited at this point, because like I believe Dar and Seth just jump over it.
It's a puppy gate. It really is. It's like a puppy gate.
So they get into this major battle. Dar has to fight the main villain, Bat-Helm. They get into quite the little scrap with his axe-like pitchfork.
It's like a mace with extended axe blades that pop out.
Yeah. It's almost like a pickaxe, with foldable sides, I guess.
Weirdly, at this point, too, this is when Dar decides to debut his Jean-Claude Van Damme air kick moves.
Yes.
Which have been absent for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, he wasn't really doing any fighting. He's doing flying roundhouse kicks.
The majority of this movie, he is happy to sit back and let his animals do everything.
Yeah.
They start fighting. He's doing all kinds of moves all of a sudden. Knocks him into the flames a bit. They're fighting there. Then he tosses his mace thing aside. Throws him over part of the bridge.
The mace is a chain.
He's swinging around. It's like a Swiss. It's like a multi-tool.
Yeah. Pretty awesome.
He knocks that aside, then does another kick into this guy who lands back first onto the spikes of this mace.
But he cuts off one of his bat ears, though.
Yeah.
He does cut off one of his bat ears.
That flying off into the night.
The guy seems to just get up and be like, oh, my axe is in my back now. I'm handling that pretty well until he gets kicked into the flames.
So the bat guy set that up. He's dead now, right? That's the end of him.
Yeah, that's the end of him.
The end of the jump horde, though.
All his horde is there, though. Everyone's just there and, like, surrounding everybody.
Again, our two major villains dead, but still the movie continues.
Which I don't get. There's no motivation for any of these things to keep fighting. Like, the jump horde, what's the motivation showing up?
I don't really get why they showed up in the first place.
They have nothing of value as far as I can tell inside the town.
The Ziggurat is full of nothing, but, like...
Dead babies
and stuff, so...
Oh, and those death guards.
The death guards.
They hate everyone.
Again, their connection to Mayax is questionable from the get go.
Whatever. I mean, fuck it. If we want to have a battle at the end. That's fine. Even though it should have been the battle with him and Mayax, but whatever.
So they're surrounded by the Juns. And then what happens?
Who comes to the rescue?
Scrotoids
show up in dramatic fashion.
It looks like they look like they're about to die until the Scrotoids show up and just start wrapping all these guys up.
Heroically digest.
Slurping their slurp all over.
The best part about it is Dara's like, I'm not sure if they're going to keep going to us.
I may have just killed us all.
Yeah, to be fair, I wasn't sure how that was going to be dealt with either, because like, these things just showed up. They kind of know Dar, maybe. They have no idea who the rest of these villagers are. They can't tell Adam from Steve. They're just going to start eating people.
He's like, we should get out of here.
Which, he does. Nobody has a tiny door.
Yeah.
Even though these things can fly.
Yeah, they just retreat back to their tiny door.
And as they're going back, like three of them, I'm guessing the main leader, the one that gave him the amulet, just stares him in the face and nods his head like, Everyone gets one.
Yeah. We're cool, bro.
We're cool.
Yeah, again, I thought it was going to be like a show me your amulet before I eat you. No, he sent it away. Yeah, he sent it away.
So they carry the kid with arrow in him.
Yeah, they carry the kid back inside.
It's kind of a jump cut in the morning.
Yeah, try and deal with him. They're talking about taking him to Draco so they can give him half his heart so he can live. they cut to the morning. They're talking about how the kid is... can't use his left arm for a while, despite the fact he was hit in the right shoulder.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Just smooth past that. And this, despite the fact that immediately after when we see the kid, he's using both hands just fine.
So at this point, Dar does not have his hand covered, and Seth notices the brand on his hand.
He finally figures out
that, oh, shoot, this is the king's unborn son that was taken.
He should be king.
And Dar's like... You train the kid. Yeah. I don't want to be king. I want to just go away and fuck Kiri. Like, yeah. I just want that to happen. Like, that's the only reason why I'm here. That's the only reason why I came here, for that.
Yeah,
it really is.
That was it.
Yeah, I just need to kill the horde and have sex with her. The rest of it's nothing
under a thin guise of revenge.
He always was somewhat detached from the rest of it. Yeah.
The only reason why it was for her.
Yeah,
might be my cousin. Whatever. Yeah. Still want to hit it. Yeah.
I don't know who my dad is.
I mean, at this point, I'm committed. I'm playing dumb.
to the point when he saved that child with the help of his hawk and brought them back, the guy was like, oh, you know, we need your help or whatever, and I'll do anything you want. And all he wanted to know was who this girl was and where to find her.
Yeah. That's it. That's all he wanted.
Can I just go back to the battle there at the end? Please do. I don't understand. Like, how we're pointing out there's two separate fight scenes, two climatic battles that should have just been one scene. Like, how hard would it have been to have, like, when Seth did that raid on the gate with the king, it failed because, oh, the Jon Horde showed up. Now the Jon Horde's there. Then Beastmaster shows up and he, you know, rescues them. They all start fighting. They all kill the Jon Horde right there. Like, bang, bang, boom. Wrap the whole thing up. One scene.
Yeah, it could have been totally one scene.
The fight on top of the ziggurat could have been with the Jon Lord, and then Max could have been there looking all smug, and then, you know, they deal with him after. Yeah,
which would have made more sense.
Like half an hour.
Or even just have Max be the leader of the Jon Horde, which would explain why they're there, why they're doing anything for him.
Yeah. You say he's their spiritual leader or something. Yeah. Like some sort of better connection.
Yeah, give us a good reason of why they're kind of working in tandem.
Like, they could have set up when the Jon Horde went to the village. They could have been stealing kids for sacrifice.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been a better link to the two to being together.
Yeah, there's 101 different ways you could have written this better, but we're a little past that now.
But then Dar gives his batarang to the kid.
It is a batarang, really.
Yeah, who, again, runs up the ziggurat and his tiny unitard dealy.
No pants. I don't understand. I mean, I'm not wearing pants, but I don't understand why no one's wearing pants.
Yeah. The Juns had pants.
The Juns did have pants.
Yeah.
Pretty fully dressed.
Right. You know how in Monty Python they say you know that's the king because he ain't got shit all over him? You should know at least the king because he's wearing pants. Yeah. At the very least, the king should have pants.
Yeah, then, so Dar leaves.
Dar leaves.
So Dar just takes off into the wild blue yonder with his animals and his newfound girlfriend, cousin.
But no, you see, it's a ploy. See, he leaves without her.
Yeah.
Because he's like, I'm going to make her want me because that's what douches do. Like, I have to ignore her and then she'll be all about me. And it works. And
she can't live without me, bro.
She chases him up a mountain. He's like on top of mountain. For no reason, on top of mountain. But whatever. That's how you end movies.
Well, yeah.
It really,
they didn't have skyscrapers for him to be.
What else did
then?
She have? What other choice did she have?
It's true.
Maybe Seth.
Yeah.
Nobody else. Like a bunch of ancient people.
I mean, Seth was the only black dude in the whole thing.
I mean, he keeps taking all of his clothes off. There's nothing left of the imagination. Yeah.
True.
You got to tease it a little.
Yeah, Dar wasn't doing a better job of that.
No, that's true.
At least Seth occasionally had robes over his loincloth. Yeah.
I don't know.
And this whole movie, she never figures out the tiger was his friend.
Yeah, that's true. She never.
More importantly, do any of them ever figure out they're cousins?
No.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Not until after they bone.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
I mean,
right?
Yeah.
I guess Dar kind of knows, but...
He don't care. Did you see them titties?
Yeah. Fair enough.
And that's...
So this is the only music that, like, that's in the movie pretty much starts playing now when they're on top of the mountain.
And just... For, I guess, to happily wrap it up, you see that the remaining ferret has had babies. I kind of question whether or not they are with the tiger, as they are getting cutesy at that moment.
Also, both of those ferrets are males.
That's the end of the movie. Final thoughts on the movie, Brian?
Well, I enjoyed the movie from a cheesy 80s aspect. However, it's not a very good movie. So I would give it, a half star. So you have to watch it by suspending reality in order to watch it. If you can do that, you have a fun time watching it. Because, like, you know, there's swords and animals and titties and that kind of stuff. So, but, again, it's not a great movie. So, half star.
Joe.
It's weird. I did not like anything in that movie, pretty much. Like, there were very few good takeaways from that, other than there were some cool animals. And then when I found out that they freaking killed the tiger, like, that killed that, too. That being said, like, even with all the bad acting, the minimal dialogue, too much exposition, crappy battles, the Beastmaster's not really much of a hero. He mostly just delegates tasks to his animals and they do the job. Besides all of that, though, I somehow liked the movie. The experience of it, I enjoyed it, and I would watch it again, even though it's not a good movie by any stretch of the means. So I would totally recommend it. I would give it a star.
Would you say it's better with a group?
Definitely better with a group.
Rob?
It's, you know, I'm on kind of the same wavelength as Joe here. Nothing about the movie really stands out as good at all. And my biggest issue with this movie is the length. This movie is 2 hours long.
So long.
And none of it is explained. Like, it's 2 hours of just stuff happening mixed in with, like, nothing happening. And none of it is explained. You don't know why this is happening or why we're waiting for something to happen here. But, I mean, that said, if you get a group of people in that can kind of fill those gaps with, you know, talking or joking around, and especially if, you know, you have a nice frosty beverage, might help you get through it a little bit. I'm a little bit on the fence here. I'm leaning more towards a half a star, just based on the time alone, like the length of this movie. It's kind of a slog to get through, to get to the fun, crazy, weird action stuff. Like, it starts out decently strong, and then it just kind of drops off around the 45-minute mark and doesn't pick up again until, like, an hour and a half to an hour and 45 minutes in. So I think I'm going to drop a half star on that.
All right. I think I'm roughly on the same wavelength as you guys as well. It is very long, unnecessarily so. There are tons of things that happen without explanation that really could use it. There are tons of things that don't need explanation that get tons of it. It's very weird in that way. And yeah, most of it is just ridiculous and not what I could certainly call a good movie. But yet somehow I do enjoy it. Maybe if you're sick one day, undoubtedly this will come up on TBS or something. You can, you know, it's enjoyable while you're sick and
it's a good sick couch.
Yeah, for sure. Or yeah, in a group, you know, certainly with a few drinks in you would help get you through this a lot easier. I think I'm gonna have to go with a half a star.
Half a star? Yeah. So that's 2.5 total?
2.5 stars.
That is 2.5.
Is our final rating here.
So that would be a recommend, huh?
Yeah, it's a barely recommend. More likely, you know, in a group or if you don't have anything better to do. There's certainly better movie options out there.
Well, that's the thing, and there's even better, like, animal-related 80s action movie. Well, maybe not animal-related, but better 80s cheesy fantasy movies out there.
This is from 82, so this is pretty early in the 80s.
For the time period,
before,
you know,
they realize that painting
it does get
tigers
some.
Bad,
kills them.
Yeah, that's, I have to say that was definitely a big factor for me. As much as I enjoyed the movie, when I found out the tiger died, it ruined a lot of the joy.
I mean, I would say if you are just starting out in the sword and sorcery genre of the 80s, like, I mean, just watch Conan.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, it doesn't have the animals, but other than that, Conan's better than this movie in every way.
It's got Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's kind of an animal.
There's wolves.
There are wolves, yeah.
There are animals.
There's a lot of pelts.
That really attack him.
Yeah. Watch the Indian scenes while it straight up bites him right in the butt.
So, yeah, it's a weak recommend with a better recommendation on top. All right, so thank you for joining us. We hope to see you next time, and till then, have a good one.
Thanks, guys.
Adios.
Bye-bye.